I want to start by telling you that it is a privilege to stand up here. I don't take it lightly. And I've been thinking about what we're discussing today, and actually it's not all of chapter 4. I just didn't have the heart to tell them because they look so excited about reading scripture. It's just this short little section, so we're not going to cover all of chapter 4 today, just verses 17 through 24, and here a little bit. I'll ask you to put that up on the screen. But before we get there, I want to tell you that I know some things today that I didn't know a week ago when I saw you last, because we went to Savannah, Georgia. And when I say we, I mean my parents and Joy. We went down to Savannah and had a vacation. Some of the things I learned, like, for example, can you picture the trees in Savannah, these big, giant live oak trees, and they have these tendrils hanging down, you know, that look kind of boggy? Anybody know what that stuff is called? Spanish moss. It's called Spanish moss. I learned that it is neither Spanish nor is it moss. It's actually part of the pineapple family. Who knew? Yeah, weird, right? Let's see, what else did I learn? I learned that Savannah is like one of the ghost capitals of the United States, and we didn't mess with that. You can actually ride around in a hearse and take a tour in a hearse to these quote-unquote haunted places. We didn't have any of those experiences, really, with the exception of the fact that our toilet would randomly flush without being touched. So without the, you know, just the ghost of the bathroom messing with us every once in a while, playing with plunger on the toilet, we didn't feel all that threatened. Let's see, one other thing that I learned is that Savannah is a historic town. It is like stepping back in time. And there's a reason for that. Whenever General Sherman was traveling south with the Northern armies during the Civil War, he was burning Georgia as he went. But when he got to Savannah, he chose not to. Anybody know why? He needed a port. That's one of the theories. Needed a port. Any other? It was too beautiful. That's one of the things. That's one of the theories I heard. Somebody said it was too beautiful. I heard from somebody else that he had a girlfriend, a mistress who lived there, and she said, "Please don't burn my hometown." And he said, "Okay, I won't." Trying to keep her happy. But Denise, our tour guide on the trolley car, said that it was actually a Christmas gift to President Lincoln. I don't know if that's true or not, but I learned a lot of other things from Denise, and here's where I make the transition to what we're actually talking about today. As we were on that ride, she was pointing at building to building to building and describing what these places were. Some of them are new construction, and you can't tell because the facades all look the same, right? They have to build, it looks alike. But there were other ones that she would point at as we would go by, and she would say, "That one right there," and she had long nails. She'd tap on the window, tap, tap, tap. "That one, fixer upper." She'd drive a little bit further, and she'd say, "Now, anybody see the plaque on that building? When was that building built?" 1799. In order for something to survive that long, you have to continue to fix it up, don't you? So some of these buildings were in process while we were there. And we knew that because there were scaffolding outside, there were work crews, there was obvious construction happening on these fixer-uppers. There was transformation taking place. If Paul were alive today, and I'm actually going to read here in a little bit, verses 17 through 24, I think what Paul is describing is transformation. And I think he would use something like this imagery of a fixer-upper to help us grasp what that really means. You and I were fixer-uppers. You and me were fixer-uppers. And that's not a bad thing. That's not there. It's value neutral, really. But you are a fixer-upper, and I'm going to explain more of what that means by using Paul's words here to describe that. Anybody here ever watched the show Fixer Upper? Or know what's going on in those shows? You've got two different people. You got Chip Gaines, and then you got Joanna Gaines, and she loves shiplap, right? But Joanna is sort of the brains of the picture. She can see it. Like, this is the transformation that's going to take place, and Chip is the brawn. He's the one who comes in and actually does the changing. There are so many shows like that. It's like the nation has been fascinated with watching transformation take place. We like to watch something go from being old to being new. We like to watch something go from being gross to being clean, something from so-so to wow. We love that, right? And especially when it only takes about 40 minutes and somebody else is doing the hard work. You know what I mean? We love to watch that happen. Paul is talking about a transformation like that that can happen in us, something from old to new, gross to clean, so-so to wow. That's what Paul's talking about. In Ephesians 1 through 3, that's the first half of the book, he is describing who Jesus is, what Jesus is like. It's like the if part of the sentence. You know, the if and then. If such and such is true, then such and such. Like, I don't know, a random example. Like, if fried chicken gives you heartburn, then don't eat fried chicken, right? So, but in this instance, it's if Jesus is who he said he is, if Jesus has done for you what we believe to be true, then, and that's where we pick up today. That's where we're about to be, right here in chapter 4. He launches into the result of believing that Jesus is who he said he is. In fact, chapter 4 starts with the word therefore. So you got to figure out what's it there for. In other words, in light of all of this, or to put it another way, if and then. So in verses 1 through 16, we are learning who and how we are to be unified as a people, unified. And he's talking to Jews and Gentiles, so that's a big divide, right? These are people who are on opposite sides of stuff in a lot of ways. Who we are, unified, and properly functioning. What does it mean to be a properly functioning person? I was telling Adam earlier, because he's over with the kids, he's like, so what are you talking about today? And I was like, well, to put it simply, it's basics. It's the 101 of what it means to follow Jesus. Let's start in 17. Paul starts getting specific about what it means to properly function. Can you put up 17 through 19? Can you find that? It's in there. It starts with something about stupid people. Do you remember that? You remember that? It stuck out to me, too. I was like, oh, stupid people. So I say this and affirm together with the Lord that you no longer walk as the Gentiles also walk. Can you find that? I'm going to read 17, 18, and 19, and it's going to be just a little bit different than what's on the screen here, because I'm going to read it from a couple of different versions. But 17, 18, and 19, so I tell you this and insist on it in the Lord that you must no longer live as the Gentiles do. Do you guys remember who he's writing to? Gentiles. So I tell you this and insist on it in the Lord that you must no longer live as the Gentiles do in the futility of their thinking. They are darkened in their understanding and separated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to the hardening of their hearts. Having lost all sensitivity, they have given themselves over to sensuality so as to indulge in every kind of impurity, and they are full of greed. Okay, so not good. It's not good. In this scenario, when we're talking about Gentiles, we're not talking about us and them. Like, don't be like them. Don't be like them. That's not really what's happening, even though that's what we want to do. Like, hey, just don't be like them. Like I said before, Paul is writing to Gentiles. So it's basically like Paul saying, hey, Gentile, stop acting like a Gentile. What? Like, where do I even begin? It'd be like telling William, hello, William. It'd be like telling William, hey, William, stop acting like a Texan. He's a Texan. He thinks they're the best at everything. He can't help himself. You know? It's like our human nature. There are certain parts of us that we can't help. Hey, Gentile, stop being a Gentile. There are certain parts of that that just aren't pretty, right? It's not pretty. When we let ourselves go to seed, so to speak, a lot of times it's not pretty. It's like a house overrun with kudzu, right? Just slowly overtaking it. You can't even tell what it's supposed to be anymore. In this instance, whenever he's talking to the Gentiles and he says this hardness of heart kind of thing, he's talking about how really they've become petrified. They've become so hard that they don't even know what they're doing to themselves or to other people. And I think sometimes that we do that. We're chasing after things that we think will make us happy with no regard for what it's actually doing to us, how it's tearing us apart, how we're getting overrun. But the thing about a passage like this and what Paul is doing is he's like, so you've got this old self and you have this new self, a before and an after, like it's this one moment in time. That's what bothers me about passages like this. Like it's one moment. Like you accept Jesus and you're good. Everything should be getting better now. You should be getting better. You've been fixed up, period, the end, right? But that's not how this works. It's not this just before and after, like, hey, stop it. Stop that. Stop. For God's sake, stop it. Stop. Change. Transform. That doesn't work. It's not just this moment. This is a lifelong endeavor, right? It's one long fixer-upper. It's like the Bob Vila of television, where you've got this one old house in Massachusetts that they've been working on for 20 years. No, that's lost on you? Okay, so it's like my Uncle David, who's an architect, and he's been slowly renovating his house since I was born, and I turn 35 tomorrow. Okay, and it's still happening. He's still working on it. It is a never-ending process, and that sounds kind of daunting, doesn't it? Becoming like Jesus isn't easy, and it doesn't happen in a 40-minute segment overnight. Okay. Thanks, Reginald. Reginald's awake. It's not compressed, abbreviated. It's not easy. So how does it begin? How do we even get started here? In verse 20 and 21, this is where he makes the shift. This is the fulcrum of the passage. It's like this thing that everything hinges upon. You didn't learn Christ this way. If indeed you have heard him and have been taught in him, just as truth is in Jesus. So how does it begin? How does the fixing up begin? Where does the shift start? Where does it continue to happen? It happens in the hearing of what Jesus has to say. Exposing ourselves to that and being taught in him. Opening ourselves up to a house inspection. Come, you're buying a house. You know what that's like. Did it pass inspection? So it's livable, right? Coming here is like having a house inspection. If you're the fixer-upper, we are allowing God to come in and look around in our lives and say, hey, this needs some attention, right? This needs some attention. So it begins just with the teaching. It begins with exposure to what God has to say in the first place about who you are and who we're supposed to be, right? So since you have learned that there's a better way to live, basically, is what Paul is saying in that moment. Since you've heard, there's a better way to go about this. There's a better way to live. Then, here's the action part. Then what? Okay, so I know there's a better way to live. So what? So I know that my house needs a little fixing up. So what? I've learned how to live in it. I've figured out how to live in it. Since you've learned that there's a better way to live, then lay aside, put off, throw off the old stuff. There's a house across the street from me. Enjoy. There's a house across the street from us that is being renovated. Do you know how we knew it was starting? They dropped off one of those giant dumpsters outside. And slowly, bit by bit, we were watching the guts of that thing that don't need to be there anymore getting put in that dumpster. Right? There are things that you and I probably need to get rid of. And I know that that's not like a super popular thing to say, like, hey, by the way, home improvement time. There's some stuff that needs to change with you. There's some stuff that needs to change with me. Change is hard. Stopping something that you're addicted to is hard. I know that personally. It takes time and effort and trying again and again. Right? There's a big dumpster across the street and they're chucking some stuff in it. There's some things that are in need of repair. How do you know what needs to go? How do you know what needs to go? How do you, why bother? Sometimes it's obvious. Sometimes it's a busted pipe and it needs attention right now. Sometimes it's a hole in the roof and you cannot ignore it. You don't want to invite people over because you know it looks bad, right? Sometimes it's obvious that it needs attention, you know? Sometimes you know, God, I got to stop that. I have got to quit. Sometimes we do things or things have been done to us that have unmistakable consequences. And we're left looking around at what we've got here and we're like, gosh, I don't even know where to begin. I painted this room and it's awful. Or I bought this house, I have this house, and there's some serious structural issues in the bones of the building. I have to tear out a wall to get it right. And that's going to take time, and that's going to take energy, and it's not going to be easy. Sometimes it's obvious. I want to give you an example. There was a day that Joy, it's not been too long ago. It's been like several months ago. You went to Oklahoma. And I have a habit of whenever I walk out a door, I lock it behind me. And the trouble with that is that if you don't have your keys on you and all the doors are locked, suddenly you've done this amazing thing to yourself where you have locked yourself out of the house. And that's what happened to me. Joy had gone to Oklahoma, and I had gone out the garage door because that's where our washer and dryer are, and I was doing laundry out there. And I went out there, and I realized I have locked myself out. I don't have my phone. I don't have my keys. It's the middle of the day in the middle of my neighborhood. How am I going to solve this problem? And so I looked around at the tools and resources that I had available to me, and I was like, I heard a story one time about how to get into a house and unlock a door. You take a screwdriver, and you take a hammer, and you put the screwdriver, a flathead screwdriver, don't do that, Daryl says, because he's tried it before. Is that why? Take a flathead screwdriver, and you jam it in the lock, and then you hit the screwdriver with the hammer, and then you break the lock, the function part of the lock, and then you should just be able to turn the screwdriver. I worked at Lowe's for a minute with a crazy guy named Marvin. He's the one who taught me that. And it does not work. So now I have a screwdriver jammed in there just sticking out of the doorknob, and I'm like, I am no better. And so I'm thinking like, okay, how desperate am I to get back in the house? I have a saw. I have a circular saw. I could cut into the door, or I could just use that same hammer and start hitting the doorknob until finally I break it off. And that is what I did. I hit the doorknob until finally I broke off the doorknob. It's an old door, by the way. It needed some renovation anyway. I break off the doorknob, and then I'm like, okay, so now what I'm left with? I'm left with having to use some needle-nose pliers and get into the guts of that thing and turn it, and if I do it just right, I can get the door to come open. And I am so proud of myself. I take a picture of it. I send it to my mom, and I'm like, fixed it, solved it, got back inside. Do you know what? Let me tell you, that doorknob was obviously in need of repair, right? At that point, it needed some attention, did it not? Do you know who ended up fixing the doorknob? Joy. You know why? Because I adapted. I learned to live with it. I'm like, I'm fine using those needle-nose pliers. It works, sort of, kind of. It was dysfunctional. It was dysfunctional. It was not really working well, but I made it work, you know? Sometimes we do that in our lives. We're like, I know this is dysfunctional. I know this is broke. But I don't want to spend the time. I don't want to spend the money. I don't want to spend the resources to really solve it. To fix what's broken here. Joy decided, I can't live like this anymore. Have you hit a point like that ever? I can't live like this anymore. Something's got to change. Sometimes it's more subtle than that. There is a commercial on the radio right now that talks about some things that can happen in your home, like cracks in the wall, sticking doors, sagging floors. Anybody know what that might be an indication of? Moisture in the basement. And so that means you might have a, what kind of problem? Compromised foundation problem. So even though the issues are subtle, even though they seem subtle, they may be an indicator of a larger issue. All right. So when we do little things that we know that's not quite right, that is not, I know that's not quite right, but it's not that big of a deal. It may be an indication of a larger thing that needs our attention. So go ahead, give it some attention. Don't be afraid to do that. You know what sometimes can help you see those subtle things? You let people get close. You invite people in. My parents were just in town this last week, and they were in our house. And, you know, when you have a fresh set of eyes, you see things that you know, they saw stuff that, I'm not saying that they were, like, nitpicking our house or whatever, but you are more inclined to see things if it's not something you're living in every day. You know? And that's why that's one of the reasons we come here. Not so we can nitpick one another, but so that we can experience some repair, some revitalization, some renewal, you know? That's one of the reasons I come here. I need to be reminded of what I'm supposed to be like, what it can be like, what life can be like, because there are days when I don't have hope, but y'all do. There are days when I am painfully aware of my brokenness, but I come here and I'm reminded, God knew me before that brokenness. God knows me in that brokenness, and God will continue to love me regardless of what happens with that brokenness. You can't just spend your whole life tearing stuff out, you know? If the house across the street just spent forever being gutted, I wouldn't want to live in there. So being a part of Christ and becoming like Jesus is not just about a list of don'ts. You know, like the stuff you hear in youth group, don't drink, don't smoke, don't chew, don't go with the girls who do, you know, that kind of stuff. Daryl, what the heck, man? Okay. There is more to becoming like Jesus than one list of don'ts. Just this long list of don'ts. Don't. For God's sake, stop it. You know? In verse 23 and 24, it said this way, "And that you might be renewed in the spirit of your mind and put on the new self, which in the likeness of God has been created in righteousness and holiness in truth." I want to read it another way. From another translation. Instead, let the Spirit renew your thoughts and attitudes. There's some part of this that is just about giving God permission. You know? Opening yourself up to the possibility that the one who built you knows what's best for you. And letting him come in, letting him address, letting him renew. It's just about giving, it's about granting access to you. Putting yourself in position to allow that to happen. Being here, reading the Bible, spending time in prayer. It's the stuff you know. You know, I'm not telling you, this is why I said it's like a 101. It's not stuff you don't know. It's just do it. You know, just a matter of doing it. And then it says, put on your new nature, created to be like God, truly righteous and holy. And so in that part, it is about you taking some sort of action, right? So what comes from God is Holy Spirit helping you. Holy Spirit renewing your thoughts and attitudes. Putting on the new nature, that takes some elbow grease. That takes some deliberate attention. Really, a better summary for all of this happens in chapter 5, verse 1. And since that's not being preached next week, I'm going to borrow it. Therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children and walk in love, just as Christ also loved you and gave himself up for us, an offering and sacrifice to God as a fragrant aroma. Walk in love just as Christ loves you. What do you say? Give it a little TLC? Tender loving care? A little love? This is kind of what, this is what you were talking about last week, William, about how love has a transforming kind of power for us. Let God love on you. Let us love on you. Spend some time taking time with your own life and love on it. Why go to the trouble? Why go to the trouble of spending your whole life renovating, taking stuff out, putting stuff in? The love stuff, whenever you think about 1 Corinthians 13, about if I can speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I'm just a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move a mountain but don't have love, I am nothing. The love part is the part that is transformative. It's what's transformative for you when you allow God to love you, when you allow others to love you, and it is also what is transformative for the whole neighborhood. When you watch a house change, like literally, when you watch a house change, Joy and I are watching some houses change for the good and for the worse in our neighborhood. And when we noticed that this house across the street was being renovated, we were like, oh, thank God. Because things are moving on up in our neighborhood. When one house changes and becomes what it is supposed to be, when it becomes this beautiful structure, the way that it was, what the builder intended, when it becomes that, it affects the whole neighborhood. It affects the house. At the very least, it raises the bar for the houses that are on either side of it, because it gets embarrassing when your yard starts growing up and theirs isn't. You know what I mean? Even just a little bit of shame will go a long way. That's not what we're talking about. But what we're you're like, well, God, I guess I better stop because, you know, so and so is watching. The point that I am trying to make is that when we begin to just be who God asks us to be, when we start to properly function, it inspires others to do likewise. It's how the neighborhood changes. So, and I mean that literally and figuratively, but so here's what I'm going to encourage you to do as you leave today, because the kids are outside playing, and so that means time is up. What I'm going to encourage you to do is, as you pass places that are in process of transformation, just say out loud or think to yourself, that's me. I'm in process. I will always be in process. I am allowed to be in process. What am I doing to contribute to that process? All right, let's pray together.